Thank you, Dr. Means. I'm standing in front of you on the two-month anniversary of the blizzard, a weather event, an extraordinary weather event that affected, I think, everybody in this room probably, either directly through losses in cattle, or if you weren't directly affected, you at least knew somebody very close to you or with your business or family or friends who were affected as well. So whether we call it Atlas, or I guess I'll probably refer to it as the October 2013 blizzard, it did affect those of us in the cattle industry as well as those outside the industry. And there's really, I'm not here to say there's anything that came out of that that was any good. But if we can at least take a step back and look at some of the effects of the blizzard on animals and people as well, I think we might be able to take some lessons, some observations that we can apply to future problems that are going to happen eventually, inevitably on the northern plains, or even if you're in Colorado dealing with floods, or even in other parts of the country dealing with things like hurricanes and things we don't have to worry about, thank goodness, here. So to help us understand some of the effects of what happened during those few days in October a couple months ago, I want to take you back to a few weeks before that, or kind of the late summer fall that we experienced here in the northern plains. You remember that we had a really warm set of circumstances. We had good moisture. There's a precipitation map from July through September of this year. We had a good fall green up of our forages in this part of the country, and that meant that the grass had lots of moisture. It had lots of protein, but it wasn't all that great in energy. It was a good fall for grass and weather, so there was no need to wean early in those cases, which had the additional implication that during the time this storm hit that we had calves out on pasture along with the mother cows as well, and those calves were still nursing those mothers and creating an energy drain on those calves as well, too. Significantly, too, that warm weather meant that there wasn't any need for those cattle to start growing that winter coat that they usually start sometime maybe late September and in early October. The events really started the night before that Thursday night, and a tremendous amount of rain fell in western South Dakota. And those of you who went through it knew what was in your rain gauges, but just for some examples, some of this data I pulled off the National Weather Service statistics for that whole period of time, but Union Center and Cottonwood had an inch and a quarter, over an inch and a half. That's about 10% of what they get in a year's time. And the implication here was now we had cattle, after this rain hit, they were literally soaked to the skin. And that brings us to the first observation of what was happening to some of these cattle during this particular time. And it gets to the concept of lower critical temperature. There's a lot that goes on in the metabolism of a cow, of a calf, of an animal. I'm not a physiologist, so I kind of try to keep it as simple as I can. And I like this concept of what's called the lower critical temperature. Basically, that means how low a temperature can an animal endure before they have to start burning energy to keep themselves warm, keep their metabolism up. And so there's a chart up there that we published on our iGrow site kind of before this even happened that kind of goes through that critical temperature. So in other words, if you have a cow in the summertime or if she's got a wet coat, any temperature below 59 degrees outside, she's got to start burning energy. And you can see how that temperature lowers as we get into fall and winter, whether it's a dry heavy coat or a dry normal coat as well. And so we know that animals, you guys have fed cows during the wintertime when it's really cold, they kind of take care of this on their own. They eat more hay, they burn more energy, they take in more energy so they can meet those demands. Now, we had a storm here that during the peak of the storm, wind chills got down to 12 or 16 degrees. And so you can do the math here and figure out how much more energy those animals really needed to consume just to maintain their body temperature. So if we're down to 12, it feels like 12 degrees out there, and they've got a wet coat, you can do the math and subtract the 12 from the 59. Those animals had to be eating or should have been eating half again as much as their normal energy intake, or maybe even up to twice as much as their normal energy intake, just standing there trying to keep warm. And that's not moving anywhere. That's not doing anything except just standing there. So we had these kind of built-in things going on, and we had the energy expended, which means we've got hypothermia setting in on those animals. There's a picture of what was going on. This wasn't just a South Dakota thing. This was in Montana, North Dakota, Wyoming, Nebraska kind of thing, too. It was a massive storm. And I don't have to tell any of you guys how big an area that really affected. So during the peak of the storm, we had some incredible wind that was happening. There's the statistics from the Union Center weather station through our state climatology office. Got up to 62 miles an hour peak wind gusts. Sustained winds over an hour's time, the average was as high as 49 miles per hour, just incredible winds that these animals had to endure. Top that off with 12 inches of snow in Union Center, and more than that in other parts of the country, other parts of the state, and you had a real significant blizzard event going on here. And this caused the cattle, of course, to bunch up and drift with the wind as the wind kind of took them out of their hiding spots, out of their shelter, and into other places and other parts of the country. So we came up with many different reasons for death losses in this weather event. First of all, hypothermia. Kind of talked about that lower critical temperature there. And of course, we've all seen the pictures. I'm not going to show any pictures. We've seen enough pictures of all these dead cattle. But cattle being trapped in the fences and getting exhausted trying to free themselves. We had a lot of moisture, remember, so there's a lot of mud in the creeks and the stock dams, drowning, just plain exhaustion on dry land. Animals using up their energy expenditures and just kind of collapsing in sight. And then we had a situation where we feel that many of the animals probably succumbed to pulmonary edema secondary to exertion. And this was a big question that we had from our producers and our veterinarians out in the field, was that when we went to move these animals, these carcasses, there was just gallons of fluid pouring out of the nose and the mouth of these animals as we moved them. And so it led people to surmise that, they probably just drowned it standing up. You know, they were taking in the moisture and the moisture was building up in the lungs and that's what made them die. They drowned it standing up. But when we get into the physiology of things, what's probably more likely to have happened is that the good old fight or flight stress response kicked in. So we had cold temperatures. We had this exertion of animals moving many, many miles, sometimes from their home spots, and this stress event of being away from their normal environment, being mothers away from their calves, calves away from their mothers, activating what we call the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system. Now, it was about 25 years ago, I was sitting in a vet school classroom learning about the renin-angiotensin aldosterone system, and this is, I think, the first time I've actually talked about it since then. So it's the body's response to a stress event. What it's doing is trying to maintain blood supply, blood perfusion to the really important organs like the brain and the heart and the liver and the gut and those kind of things. So this is a physiological response. And the way I kind of think about it is that, let's pretend I have a stock tank here into which some water's being poured into it at a kind of a constant rate. And I've got a 3-inch pipe. And I'm going to run that pipe out from my stock tank out into that hallway. And I'm going to have a hand pump. And I'm going to pump that water into that hallway through that 3-inch pipe, okay? So I'm pumping here. Now I've got a stressed out animal, and this fight or flight system is kicking in. What that effectively does is take my 3-inch pipe and make it into like a 1/2-inch pipe. So what's going to have to happen if I want to pump that same amount of water or blood in the case of a cow? I'm going to have to work harder, right? I'm going to have to push more exertion to get that same amount of water through that smaller pipe out into the hallway. So that's what was going on. The heart has to work harder to pump that fluid. In the meantime, this aldosterone is saying, we've got to hang on to this blood volume because we need this blood to perfuse the brain and the kidneys and the liver and everything like that. So now we've got more water coming into the system that I've got to pump. And when I finally give out because my arm can't take it anymore, and I'll switch my arm and I'll go to the other arm and I just can't pump anymore, what's going to happen to my stock tank over here? Water's going to start spilling over the side, right? That's what it does in the lungs. So the heart is trying to pump that circulation through the lungs, and the fluid is building up. And so we've got all this buildup of pulmonary edema, or basically fluid from the bloodstream into the lungs, and that's what was backing up into the airways and probably causing most of the fluid that we saw in the carcasses. We had this question about dry land drowning so much that it behooved us to kind of go back to our physiology and what happens when water and moisture is taken into the lungs. And what we found out was that actually when we have fresh water like rain or snow or whatever that's taken, breathed in, if it makes it down to the airways, what actually happens is that fluid is going to be absorbed into the bloodstream. Because remember from chemistry class that whole thing about osmosis? If we've got water, it's going to want to move to the place where there's more solutes on the one side of the equation. So the fresh water is going to want to move into the bloodstream. Now contrast that with salt water drowning. The salt water in the lungs will pull fluid from the bloodstream of the lungs, and you'll actually have a lot of fluid coming out of the airways in that kind of case, but not when we have a freshwater kind of situation. So that fluid that was really noted by many people in these carcasses probably came from a mostly exertion and the heart failure from the whole episode. So we had a lot of dead cattle, and this is probably the most talked about number of cattle, for many years in western South Dakota, how many animals actually died. And the truth is we'll probably never know exactly. Talking to Dr. Reinders at the animal industry booth during the break, we're up to 20,600, something like that, that's been actually reported. A lot of talk about that. I don't know how important that is, whether 20,000 is worse than 22,000 or worse than 18,000. It's just bad, and that's really all we kind of came up with there. But it got a lot of attention from a lot of different people, and there were some really wild kind of estimates thrown out there, but we're going to probably end up in that kind of range right there. Now, that's the overall numbers, but for individual ranches, and I've talked to many of you out in the audience who did have losses during this blizzard, and for each individual farm, you know how many you lost, and it was very high numbers in some cases. This is an example of one of the submission forms we found from one of the cases that was sent into our diagnostic lab at SDSU, in which they talk about we had 120 in the herd, and they lost 100, and you sure hear stories about those kind of devastating losses. So following the storm, the question became, what's going to happen to the live animals? And we did get some reports. Hats off to our veterinarians and our producers who kind of shared their experiences with us about what was happening with the live animals after the blizzard. We had some reports of what the veterinarians were describing as almost like grass tetany kind of situations, where cows would be very twitchy, very hyper-excitable, and they'd go down just kind of like a grass tetany. And there is kind of a correlation with a syndrome called transport tetany, or maybe some of you remember it as railroad sickness. What happens when you haul animals for a long period of time without feed and water, and then they go back on their feed and water, it just disrupts their mineral metabolism so much that they have these kind of these kind of derangements. And so what probably was happening is these animals were deprived of feed and water during the actual event and seeing some of these kind of derangements. And maybe after we know that the grass was really growing after this or before the blizzard, maybe some of that grass was even a little bit low in magnesium too, and maybe that exacerbated some of the tetany kind of things. But that is one thing we saw, not very successful to treat. Veterinarians will tell you that treating grass tetanies is not always very successful compared to other things like milk fevers. So we found some not so good a treatment successes in those cases. So a lot of bloating in calves afterwards. And some of this is kind of speculation on why this happened. Probably these calves were bloating up due to more of an acidosis after they actually resumed feeding again or resumed eating, eating the grass, nursing their mothers again. Their bodies had gone through a stretch where they hadn't been taking in much food. So this kind of bloating happened, and many of those animals did need some treatments, some letting down with some mineral oil and that kind of thing. It wasn't just cattle that were affected during the blizzard. We had some, many horses were perished in the blizzard as well. We did have a case sent into the diagnostic lab in which they diagnosed the tying up or the Monday morning syndrome in horses. You know, when you take your horse out for a whole weekend and they sit in the barn or in the pen for most of the week, that exertion kind of makes a little bit of a muscle breakdown. And some of the exertion that these animals were going through traveling through the blizzard probably contributed to some of the muscle damage in those cases. And then, interestingly enough, and I just found this out talking to producers, there was a couple of people would just bring this up to me out of the blue. They'd say, you know, Doc, we had a couple of cows that just went ape on us, just went completely aggressive and wanted to take us and wanted to eat our lunch. And I don't have any real physiological explanation for that. But I do remember treating cows once in a while that have had some real bad lung problems, and they're maybe having a little trouble getting air, kind of making their brain crazy, for lack of a better medical definition. And it's been kind of described in anaplasmosis cases when cattle are anemic and not maybe getting oxygen maybe to the right places in the brain. That's the only thing I can kind of figure out about why cattle would become aggressive. Some of the same changes that were going on in the lungs to create the pulmonary edema might have been kind of at play there. So that was right after the storm. In the weeks following the storm, we kind of knew and tried to prepare producers for this as much as possible. Anytime you have a longer-term stress event, it's going to increase the cortisol levels in the body of the animal. And what that does is kind of shift around the way the immune system works. It dampens down the part of the immune system that especially likes to attack viruses. Now, this blizzard didn't bring in any new novel cattle illness or respiratory agent or anything like that. But what it did was stress out the animals enough so that those normal IBR, BRSV viruses that kind of circulate at a low level in cattle populations anyway, the Mannheimia, the Pasteurella that's there in the nasal passages, can then take off and create more of an illness. So we did have a lot of animals that were sick with respiratory disease afterwards. And for the most part, if people could get to these animals and treat them, they were pretty successful in bringing them out of it. So we knew that there was going to be an increased susceptibility. We knew that along with this increased susceptibility to these agents, that when you give these animals a vaccine under this influence of cortisol, that it's not going to work as well. So if people had planned on giving vaccinations, you know, the few days after the storm, our advice was just to back off, just wait, and let that let those cortisol levels get back to normal, and then they'll have a better response. Also, we saw a lot of pink eye in calves and some cows after the storm as well, and we can only just kind of surmise that walking through the snowstorm with the increased irritation to the eyes probably helped that along. We know that the organisms that cause pink eye are probably there in a great number of normal animals, and it just takes that little bit of irritation to kind of set it off. So that's probably what was going on there. We had producers that were faced with making some management changes. We talked to several people who decided to kind of hold on to the calves for a while. and not market them right away. And so in some cases, we had to think about how to wean calves, how to start them on feed, how to get feed bunks in and that kind of thing. And for the most part, I think people were kind of successful. We did hear of many, well, I don't know about many, but definitely the stories were out there of the cattle who were very stressed out, who were stuck in the creeks and the stock dams, losing pregnancies, seeing cleanings hanging out of them afterwards. And so we knew that fetal losses were going to be a part of this. However, you know, for most of the normal animals who got through things and got through healthy, it takes a lot to stress a fetus out of a cow. That cow really wants to hang on to that fetus at any expense. So we're not thinking there's probably going to be a lot of bad reproductive losses in animals that survived the storm, cows that survived the storm. But I have heard some other stories, individual stories about some bad preg checks too. What we don't know, and maybe we can talk to Dr. Funston about this, is what's the sublethal effects of stress on the fetus during this time of development too. And I don't think we really know the outcome of that. So like I said, nothing really good came out of this storm, but if we can kind of be prepared for sequelae or things that happen afterwards the next time something like this happens, we might be able to treat animals a little bit quicker and get on them. This tetany thing, the bloat in the calves and pink eye are all things that we can be aware of and be ready for afterwards something like this happens. A lot of these things were probably caused by that feed resumption coming back on feed after this blizzard. Not really sure how you manage that. I guess all I can say is just be aware of that. You know, if in most cases these cows were out on pasture and able to eat green grass, and you sure don't want to prevent them from doing that. But if they were up in the feed in the lots, maybe just some coarse hay and just kind of letting their bodies get readjusted back to things might be the way to go there. Talked about adjusting the management to allow for that stress level in the calves and maybe holding off on vaccines for a while, for a couple weeks anyway, at the least. As we had many animals get mixed up with other herds, it proved the usefulness and the necessity for animal ID, whether they're brands or ear tags or something that could identify animals back to the herd of origin. And probably one of the biggest lessons, maybe not anything that you guys learned from this, but maybe something that other people had to learn, was that sometimes it's not good enough to do everything right. Sometimes bad things happen. Sometimes we have animals in sheltered areas and they still die. Sometimes we have them out in good condition to get through the winter, get through the late fall, and things still happen. So I think sometimes we were faced with educating other people about some of the questions that came up. Why did all these animals die? You know, don't you guys put them all in barns so you don't have this problem? I mean, that's something I heard from my own in-laws back in the eastern side of the state. So it created an opportunity, I think, and I think some of us and people in this room were very involved with this, is getting out the message of what it actually takes to raise animals here in the Northern Plains and what you do on a daily basis to make sure that they do survive and thrive, and also that sometimes it's just not good enough, and sometimes bad things happen, you know, regardless of what goes on. I think there was really nothing good that came out of this, but there was a lot of good that was already there after the storm. And what I'm talking about there are the stories about neighbors helping neighbors. You know, hey, I know your animals got in with mine, but I'll feed them for a while, and we'll just kind of sort them out later, you know, when it works for everybody. People looking after each other, other people who weren't directly involved donating money and heifers. This is an example of just a community event in New Underwood. This happened to be that I was at, that that would just created a lot of opportunities just to get together and talk. And maybe some of you in this room were at that event too. I think we did learn that we do look out for each other, whether we were affected directly or not. those of us who weren't affected directly and are on the other side of the state, wanting to do things, wanting to donate money, wanting to donate heifers, you know, through the things like Heifers for South Dakota. So I guess in closing, I just want to also kind of reiterate that now we're 2 months past this storm here, and we shouldn't, you know, stop thinking about it, stop thinking about the people who were affected. If you were not affected, you know, this is a good time to kind of reach out to your friends and neighbors and clients and customers who were. And we're getting to the holiday season. It's not a great time of year, you know, for some people. So I do want to, you know, extend that hope that you would do that. And then for those of you who were affected, and I know there's many of you out in the audience who did lose animals here, you know, sometimes I know how you guys work, and it's you don't want to have the help. You don't need the help. There's always somebody else who got, you know, hit worse than I did. But you know, sometimes you can have that giving kind of attitude. And what I mean by that is sometimes a gift that you give can actually be something like letting other people help you, no matter how minor it is. Just letting somebody, you know, come over and have a meal with you, or you know, do something for you, feed the animals for you, or whatever it is. But letting people kind of help you out, that's something that you can give those of us who weren't directly affected as well. So I do want to acknowledge a lot of people who were involved in putting together this information. I'm very proud of my colleagues in Extension who really got on the ball right away and started, you know, putting some of this information together. Maybe not so much for you guys, but for those people who were asking those questions about why did so many animals die in the blizzard. Many of you are in the room, Ken and Warren and Adele. My colleagues at the Vet and Biomedical Sciences Department at SDSU who took some of the cases in. Dr. Joe Neary at Colorado State helped us with some of that respiratory stuff that was going on there. Animal Industry Board, you know, they didn't talk about this, but the federal government was shut down, as you know, when this was all going on. And our state agency really stepped up and kind of took that reporting method on during this kind of time when nobody else was doing it. And they've been really great to work with. And then the veterinarians who I got a lot of information from. You know, I hate to say it for you other states out there, but South Dakota veterinarians, some of the best food animal veterinarians in the world. You know, they're engaged with their clients, they're engaged with their industry, they're engaged with us at the university, and they provided a lot of good information for us that we could pass on to others, and I just thank them so much for that. And then those of you, the West River ranchers who were affected, and being able and having the courage to share your stories and your experiences, we can't learn from others unless you do that and share those kind of experiences with each other and with us as well. So I applaud you for that. I applaud you for your courage, and all I can say is hang in there as time goes on. Thank you.